This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Yeah, I mean, these problems compound one another. They're of a piece, even though people are talking about this year as a drought buster. In some ways, it's revealing the shortcomings and the weaknesses in our infrastructure.
California's soggy winter and spring belie its long-term water prospects. While it's true that the Golden State is experiencing record rainfalls, California's water problems have far from evaporated. A warmer globe means wilder swings of storms and drought, deluges and scarcity. Is the most populous state ready for these wild swings? What are they doing with the surplus that's literally spilling over aquifers right now? And how will they ensure that groundwater stores are not completely depleted? This week on Sea Change Radio, we hear from environmental writer Jeremy Miller, who discusses his recent New Yorker article chronicling California's deep systemic water problems. Miller talks about the impact of the flooding in Northern California, shares ideas from experts on how to recharge the state's stressed groundwater reserves, and posits that California needs a more sustainable model for fresh water that's less dependent on the snowpack in the Sierra Mountains. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jeremy Miller. He's a writer, and his most recent piece for The New Yorker is entitled California's Drought May Be Over, But Its Water Troubles Aren't. Jeremy, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's great to have you. You've been on this show several times, and around 5 or 6 years ago, we had you on discussing California's water problems that were stemming from fracking, kind of a under-the-radar water problem that sprang up from California's oil and gas industry. Since that time, California has undergone not only a vicious drought, it's now flipped to the other side of the coin, and we have almost too much water in California to deal with. Why don't you first explain what happened and what is happening at the Oroville Dam? A lot of people aren't aware of the issue and what it really reflects.
Right. Well, so the issue at Oroville is that the Feather River tributaries that feed the Oroville Dam, which are up in the northern part of the state, were hit by a series of huge storms in January and February, and basically overwhelmed the reservoir and the dam's capacity to shunt water out of the reservoir. And they had to start making emergency releases and at one point, so much water was being released out of the main spillway of the reservoir that the flow of water, which is equivalent to, I think, about the flow of Niagara Falls, started caving in the main spillway. And so what happened was the water managers had to redirect that flow to an emergency spillway, which is just an earthen hillside. And so this huge flow of water flowed down the earthen hillside and quickly began eroding channels into the hillside and threatening the integrity of the reservoir. So luckily, the water managers were able to get enough water out and stabilize the reservoir to stop the flow through the emergency spillway and make a sort of a makeshift repair on the main spillway. But it was a disaster nearly averted. And I think that Oroville tells us about the huge shift in weather that we've had this year. This year has been one of the wettest on record. Right now, California's snowpack stands at, I think, 187% of the average, which is, I mean, a complete reversal from last year. So, you know, we're at the level of surface water, we're seeing a lot of issues around management of water that, you know, we've sort of forgotten about over the last 5 years of drought.
So you mentioned that the Oroville release was that it was the same flow as Niagara Falls. You write in the article 2.7 billion gallons per hour. So there's quite a bit of water, but this isn't water that's going to be managed. This is water that's being released back into the ocean ultimately. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Well, so the issue is that in years past, 50 years ago, a lot of this snow in the Feather River Basin would have fallen as snow. But with warming temperatures, what's happening is that this precipitation is now falling as rain. And when you've got huge rainfall in our rainy season, it becomes a management nightmare for water managers. And that's sort of the essence of the article, is that we're seeing, you know, even though this year has been very wet and we've seen record snowpack in the High Sierra, we've seen a distinctive shift in precipitation patterns from snow to rain. So what happened in the Feather River Basin is, you know, that this huge deluge came down as rain, and that overwhelmed the reservoir's capacity to handle it. And you're seeing this statewide. You know, even though we've got a lot, like I said, a lot of snow, we've also seen high temperatures in the Sierra and these rain on snow events, which is basically rainfall hitting the snowpack and causing snowmelt to happen much more rapidly. This is a, you know, an unprecedented year for moisture, but it's also the third warmest year on record.
And that's not a trend that's soon to be reversing. We're going to see warmer and warmer weather. So the template for having what a snowpack means for California's water is shifting, because any skier was a little ambivalent this year when they saw all this snow. And if you look at the snow reports, there's just a base of, you know, 300 inches at Squaw or whatever. But as you mentioned, this rain comes, so you kind of have to restart. So the skiing hasn't been amazing. There's been great days, but it's not consistent. And we're finding the same thing happens with trying to manage a snowpack, which is not a traditional snowpack anymore.
Right. Well, then, just to put it into context, you know, we remember that we've had 5 years of drought. What we need to remember is, okay, so 2015 was the hottest, driest year on record. 2014 before that was the warmest. So, you know, three consecutive years we've been in this uncharted territory in terms of temperature. So you're right. It's a mixed blessing. We've got this huge snowpack, but we've also got these high temperatures. And I think we're going to see some hydrological chaos in the weeks ahead. And we've already seen some earlier this season. But these extremely high temperatures are going to mean huge spring runoff, and so it's going to present a whole series of management challenges to the water managers downstream. Another bit of evidence that's important, that is interesting to look at, is the flooding of the Yolo Bypass. So when the Sacramento is in flood stage, water managers have the ability to shunt water out of the river and put it into this massive managed floodplain. And that floodplain hasn't been used in about a decade. And so it's a great place to kind of, to go down and just see the scale of the amount of water. We're talking a flood plain, as I say in the story, on the magnitude of about 20 Central Parks in size. That doesn't mean much, I guess, for non-New York listeners.
Well, you wrote this for the New Yorker, so it's fine.
But it's a massive inland sea of water that isn't normally there, and it's there, and then we're going to have these huge spring flows on top of it, and it's a challenge for our water managers to deal with, and it's reminiscent of what the Central Valley looked like before the big flood control projects of the early 20th century came in and straitjacketed these rivers and built the levees. You're sort of seeing that expanse of the delta looking the way it did 100 to 150 years ago. You know, that's a great place to get a sense of the scale of the water that's in the mountains and in California right now.
That I love you so. These are the seasons of emotion, and like the wind, they rise and fall. This is a wonder of I see the torch. We all must hold. And people, this is a mystery of the quotient. Upon us all, a little rain must fall. Just a little rain. I know.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author and writer Jeremy Miller. So Jeremy, the real variable with groundwater is what you're talking about with these older canals and aqueducts and how they're trying to adapt to this new reality. Why don't you explain how we're getting land slump because of the overpumping of groundwater and what this means with this influx of rain now?
Well, first, you know, I'd like to say, you know, just to kind of just step back, that California still has what's called a snowpack dependent model of water storage, meaning that our reservoirs and canals and aqueducts are designed for a past climate in which most of the moisture was locked up in the mountains and didn't have to be stored in large reservoirs. It's dependent on long-lasting snowpack in the mountains, right? So now we have a situation where we're having more rain events in the winter, earlier melting, and so the reservoirs and canals can't handle it. So that's the situation for this year. But in the previous 5 years, with the record low snowpacks that we saw, is that California became increasingly, and particularly California's agricultural sector, became increasingly dependent on groundwater. Agriculture is the largest user in California, accounting for somewhere between, I think, 60% and 80% of total water use in California. So before the drought happened, it was declared it, 40% of the water being used in California in total came from these aquifers, these underground reservoirs in the Central Valley. But after the drought, at the height of the drought, that percentage jumped from 40 to 75%, right? And so you were hearing stories about these drill rigs in the Central Valley, you know, about being able to look out at night and see like constellations of drill rigs flickering in the night, probing for water. And what happened is that in that time, these massive reservoirs were drawn down, and it was a completely unsustainable sort of use because the water was being pumped out at a much faster rate than it was recharging. And this was manifesting in all sorts of ways. You saw some towns along the west side of the Central Valley, I'm sorry, the east side of the Central Valley, near Visalia, some of these small farming communities running out of water. You know, farmers' wells were going dry. The problem, though, is that we have all this water now, but there's no way to rapidly get that water back into the ground to recharge and replenish those underground reservoirs. And you asked about subsidence. One of the consequences of this massive overdraft of groundwater is that if you pump enough out, the land literally collapses. You know, a lot of these soils are you know, heavy in organic material. We draw the moisture out, it can collapse. And when it collapses, in some cases, that land loses the capacity to be recharged. Those are, you know, you lose that underground water storage forever, basically. So that's the trick, is that we've got this surplus of water now, but our water engineering doesn't allow that water to percolate back into the ground. That section of the Central Valley that I'm mentioning was once under a massive lake, Tulare Lake, and there was another smaller lake called Buena Vista Lake, which were two of the largest freshwater lakes west of the Mississippi. Those have been engineered away, but those lakes were responsible for these massive underground aquifers. That water percolated over thousands of years down into those rock layers, and they're no longer there. So this is the trick. This is the challenge that we've been, if you think about these underground aquifers as sort of a storage bank or a bank account, we've been overdrafting. We've been taking out much more than we've been putting back in, you know, for the last 100 years. And that is just, that's not sustainable, particularly when we're talking about that on an average year, we depend on that water for 40% of our use in California.
You spoke about how we kind of engineered away in California what was once a very vibrant water-laden area in California's Central Valley. And these lakes that had been engineered away, they were the source for the aquifers and the groundwater. But now those are gone. What are some of the best solutions you're hearing for recharging that groundwater system that existed in the 1860s?
Right. Yeah. Well, so I've heard from some very smart people, Peter Glick at the Pacific Institute, Noah Diffenbaugh at Stanford University, that there isn't really good news on this front, that there really aren't any large scale models yet that will help us solve our overdraft problem. There is one project that people point to often, and that's the Kern Water Bank, which is a man-made water banking system in the southern Central Valley where surplus water can be added to the surface and pumped underground in wet years and taken up in dry years. And Josh Harkinson at Mother Jones has done some very nice reporting about the Kern Water Bank. The problem with it is that the Kern Water Bank has come under the control of a billionaire named Stuart Resnick, who's used the Kern Water Bank to meet his own ends. He's to grow his own almond and pistachio empire. So the Kern Water Bank is capable of storing 488 billion gallons of water, and is a solution. But the problem is it's been privatized, and so it's sort of a scandal down there in the southern Central Valley because public money was used to build it. So. But there's another promising project that I've heard about in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties, where they're experimenting with recharging aquifers. One of the problems in California is that we just don't have a good sense of how these aquifers work. We're still trying to figure out how they tie together, how surface water flows into them, and how we've got to have that understanding before we can really devise schemes to recharge these underground water banks. And the other thing that Peter Glick made a great point in when I was speaking to him for my article is that we also need to know, it's like if you think of this like a bank account, we need to know what's going in and we need to know what's coming out. And until we figure out how to do that accounting, that sort of net metering, there's no incentive to do it. I mean, it's a good idea in practice, but until we have a good way to monitor input and output, it's not a viable solution. But I think it is. It's the future of water storage in California in a time of climate change. These we've got water experts pointing to underground aquifers as the best way to do storage. We're not going to be permitting large reservoirs and dams anymore. The snowpack's going away. These underground reservoirs are seem to be the solution. But we just have to improve our understanding of how these things work and how we might set these systems up.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about Glick's comments. You quote in the article that California won't pursue artificial recharge until it can keep better track of who's using what, like you just mentioned. But what is artificial recharge? How can this actually be done? Can groundwater supplies be
recharged.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, they can. I mean, there's been some pilot projects to show that you can put water on the surface, and that water in certain places will percolate underground and it will refill aquifers. Another way is to, you know, to pump it using a sort of a pipe and putting it underground. So artificial recharge just means, instead of allowing nature to do it in these places, that we're devising how these systems are set up.
So cloudy, I believe it's gonna rain. So cloudy, so cloudy, I believe it's going to rain. I don't believe my woman love me. She in love with another man. Go look at the weather. I believe it's going to be a flood.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author and writer Jeremy Miller. So Jeremy, it sounds like California is going to be in limbo for the next two decades plus, because they've required that government agencies achieve sustainability in how they apportion groundwater, but not until 2040. What does that mean?
So before 2014, California was sort of the Wild West of groundwater. It's sort of counterintuitive. You think of California as a very progressive state in environmental governance, but until 2014, we had no laws on the books that required any kind of reporting about groundwater. It was this sort of old Wild West. If you were there first and you had the deepest well, you got the most water. In 2014, that changed and required basically groundwater districts to be set up. And these individual districts had to set up their own groundwater management plans. But the problem is that, and this was at the height of the drought, that those districts didn't have to achieve, they had to devise plans, but they didn't have to achieve sustainable groundwater withdrawals until 2040. Which doesn't, you know, when you're facing a situation as dire as we were seeing in the Central Valley, seems like that's a long way off. So we're still, like you say, we're still in a sort of limbo here in terms of governance. We're as someone who watches water, I would say that I think we're not moving fast enough on the groundwater issue. Particularly that if we're in, you know, with what the predictions about climate change say, we're in this phase of, you know, intensified drought and wet years, you know, we could be looking at another 5 years of drought after this year. You know, we just don't know what's going to happen. And groundwater is our insurance policy. It's what gets us through those lean years. But if we're not achieving sustainability till 2040, I mean, we could see things get to a sort of breaking point in the Central Valley.
It seems like we're going to be spending a lot of time over the next decades putting our thumbs in the dike, which would actually prohibit large-scale management projects from really taking root. We had Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom on the show a few months ago, and he kind of hinted that the controversial Delta Tunnels project is probably not going to ever happen. But there are lots of other big civic works that I'm sure that water management people would like to try to embark upon to try to make a more permanent solution. But we're going to see more of these Oroville type events where we have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to try to
put Band-Aids on a system that's being tested by these severe periods of drought, and now we're having the opposite, a lot more precipitation. It really kind of prohibits a major, like a Tennessee Valley Authority of the next century to be put in place, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's that there's a sort of piecemeal nature of all of this, that these big projects were built, 50 to 100 years ago, and we're playing catch up. The climate is changing, and we're reacting, and we hear a lot about the country's crumbling infrastructure. Well, California's water infrastructure is part of that crumbling system, and we're seeing it, and like you're saying, this swing between drought and extreme wetness is challenging everything that we've got, and it's taking its toll. Just to get back to the subsidence issue, one irony of the extreme groundwater pumping in the Central Valley is that some of the most severe subsidence is happening directly under the California Aqueduct. And there are folks at the USGS that are looking at it, because what's happening is it's reducing the capacity of the California Aqueduct to move water. So you have a situation where one drought-related problem is compounding another, that the subsidence is actually weakening the system that we have in place to artificially shuttle water from Northern California to Southern California. And so, yeah, I mean, these problems compound one another. They're of a piece, even though people are talking about this year as a drought buster. In some ways, it's revealing the shortcomings and the weaknesses in our infrastructure.
Love it. Drought buster. I think that's our title right there. Well, it's a great piece. Keep up the work that you're doing. The latest is California's drought may be over, but its water troubles aren't, in The New Yorker. Jeremy Miller. Jeremy, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the New Jersey Kings, Led Zeppelin, and Muddy Waters. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.